Hello everyone, this is Alireza Ziadat. This is a new episode of PayTech Talk. Today we have again two special guests, which you already know. We have Henry de Jong and we have Gürkan Nazanin with me. And we will talk today about DeFi, decentralized finance, and decentralized finance services like lending, yield farming, etc. And so I would like to ask you, Henry, can you explain a little bit to the listeners, what is yielding? What is DeFi? Give a brief introduction, please.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much for the kind invitation, Ali. And before I explain what yielding is, let me start with DeFi, the abbreviation of decentralized finance. And DeFi is the opposite of our traditional financial infrastructure, where banks play a central role. And to make or receive a payment, you always depend on the bank's willingness to execute your transaction. And with DeFi, you are in control of the tokens in your wallet. And examples of DeFi are lending and borrowing services. And that is where yielding comes in. Through a smart contract, you can lend your tokens to a DeFi app, for example, a liquidity pool that collects tokens from investors. And this DeFi borrows the tokens to third parties. And you as an investor in return receive an interest. And this interest is called the yield. And there are some risks involved with DeFi and yielding. And especially with Ethereum-based DeFis, transaction fees can be very high, as you know. And you therefore need to invest a substantial amount to reach a profit. And secondly, investors are in most of the cases not protected in a DeFi if a DeFi gets hacked or the company behind the DeFi goes bankrupt. And here in return is my question to you, Ali. Are DeFis regulated or will they be regulated through MiCAR?
So that's a good point. I mean, thank you first for the explanation, Henry. And for those of you who are interested to read more on the DeFi explanation from a commercial and from a legal perspective, there's a nice paper of Deutsche Bundesbank, which came out a couple of months ago. So if you just Google it, you will find it in German and in English, which explains pretty much what DeFi means also from a legal and commercial perspective. And also the question, is DeFi regulated? So DeFi is actually not regulated if it's a really fully decentralized structure. And fully decentralized means that we do not have any intermediaries and we do not have anyone who's controlling or has significant influence on the DeFi structure. And as we could see from the SEC and FinCEN, so the US regulators, they gave a couple of comments. They said, okay, DeFi is not regulated if it's really truly decentralized. However, in a decentralized structure, like in a decentralized autonomous organization where you have token, like governance token, which embody voting rights, you usually also have some parties which hold a big amount of such token. And the big amount could be the majority, so more than 50%. In that case, I would say this is not decentralized because the one who has more than 50% of voting rights has significant influence on the DAO and on the DeFi. Therefore, there is an intermediary. And therefore, we may have someone who could say this is an obliged entity and this one should be seen as the regulated entity, like as a broker or as a prop trader or something in that, on that behalf. We could also say that this threshold is not 50%, but as we look at it, when we talk about financial institutions, this could be already at 10%. So anyone who has more than 10% of the DAO token, of the governance token, could be seen as someone who has significant influence on the DeFi structure. And then we could say, yeah, this is not really truly decentralized. Plus, what many don't know, even in a fully decentralized structure where you do not have someone who has more than 10% voting rights, you usually have someone who's a market maker. So someone who is in the background who is matching the order when we have a liquidity shortfall and someone needs to match the order. So then there's a market maker who is then acting. In that case, in my opinion, the market maker who is matching the order should be regulated. And then again, the DeFi in all is not regulated, but the participant could be regulated. But to put it in a nutshell, right now, a truly decentralized DeFi structure is not regulated and will also not be regulated in the future when we're going to have the markets and crypto assets regulation in place. And therefore, a truly decentralized structure is not regulated. With this said, I would like to go a little bit over to you, Gökhan. So what do you say? I mean, I right now said that it's not regulated. Do you think it's good that it's not regulated, or would you say it should be regulated? What is your opinion in that respect?
I mean, sometimes even if it's regulated, it doesn't change the outcome. You know, you see that we have so many regulated institutions out there, and if someone would like to do something, they do it anyway, because there's always a backdoor to find in the regulation and which institutions use. Because maybe also giving a little bit of insights about the difference between DeFi, CeFi, and traditional finance, because there's still a step between, which are the CeFis, for instance. I mean, traditional finance is like a torso, you know, the arms, the legs. If you like to have an insurance, you go to an insurance company like AIG or Allianz or Munich Re. If you would like to have a loan, you go to a bank like Citi or Deutsche Bank, you know, and things like this. And that is a traditional finance, which are, let's say, more backed with fiat currencies currently. And then you have the CeFi, which are the centralized finance. In this case, especially now in the crypto universe or the digital universe, that are the crypto exchanges, because it is still a middleman. So the difference between those two things or three things is that with the traditional finance and the central finance, you always have a third party who's involved in the transactions, in the investments, and all the actions you're going to take to do something. And that is the difference between DeFi. So, and you always have a risk. You have a risk that the bank can go bankrupt. I mean, we had the Green Hill stuff, the Wirecard stuff in Germany recently. We have now the Celsius stuff, and I guess Celsius is a special case which we can discuss and look a little bit closer. And you know that we had also some rumors that Coinbase is out of money, you know. And the problem is, if you are going to invest in platforms, they're running out of money. The problem is not your keys, not your coins. I mean, that is a sentence which we all know since we are in the crypto universe, and that is a difference there. And yes, even those guys are regulated, but if something is going to happen, then your cryptos are gone with the wind, and then the regulations will not really save you, or it's a huge problem to get the things which belongs to you. So therefore, is it a risk with DeFi for being not regulated? Not really, if you ask me, but I guess for the average Joe and the mass market, it is a kind of showstopper to get adopted by the mass. And that is the problem, because people think if something is regulated, it's so secure, it is so safe that I trust that fully and I can invest in that. And I guess that is currently a little bit the showstopper, what keeps the people or the majority away from going more into those platforms. I mean, DeFi are platforms like Osmosis, Pancake, and Uniswap and things like this, which allow you to do lending, trading, investing the things directly with those people you would like to do the business with, and getting rid of the middleman, which is okay, because then you don't have to pay fees. Because as an example, if we're going to invest in Kraken, I'm buying my cryptos on Kraken, I always have to give a fee to Kraken because I'm able to invest. On the other side, I can also stake my stuff, but if I'm staking my cryptos, for instance, then I have to put my cryptos on that platform. I lend it to the network, which also is good because I'm supporting the network with the staking over there and get rewards for that, you know. And then we can talk about the APY, APR stuff, because that's also a difference, even if it's the same thing, but they have different outcomes at the end of the day. So, I mean, with everything you have there, there's always a risk. So you will never have a no risk or a low risk. Risk will be also, it depends on the appetite of risk which you have. And I think we're still in the early days, and I guess there will be a huge difference from today on in 3 years, in 5 years, and also in 10 years. And I guess in 10 years, we will meet again, hopefully, and we will talk about the stuff we're going to talk about now and say, hey, we already told that 10 years before. You know?
Yep. Yeah, so you just mentioned staking, Gökhan, and I think that staking is a good alternative to yielding, because it's the investors are exposed to lower risks, and staking means that you invest your cryptocurrencies in a pool, and this pool receives a reward for its stake in proof of stake blockchains, stake blockchain validation, and this becomes more popular these days. Yeah, so we see what will happen with Ethereum within 2 weeks. They move away from proof of work to proof of stake. And these proof-of-stake blockchains use a fraction of the energy that proof-of-work blockchains consume. And as I said before, the risk for the investors are limited, but the yield might be lower compared to DeFi lending. And there I have one more question more for you, Ali. Providers of crypto custodian servers can invest the cryptos in DeFi's, like in staking. But if something goes wrong with the DeFi or the custodian service provider, like we've seen with Celsius, the cryptos are considered part of the provider's assets. And why are they not separated from the company's assets, like you have with PSPs or providers of e-money services?
Yeah, thank you, Henry, and also thank you, Gökhan. Before I really answer that one, I just want to follow up what you said, Gökhan, because I think this is very important before I answer the next one. So, and it also really gives in a nutshell what you said in the beginning, Henry. So when we talk about DeFi, it means in a nutshell that the middleman is taken out. So there's no intermediary, which will produce some risks, because then you have actually a peer-to-peer action and a peer-to-peer trading or peer-to-peer activity. And if we have an intermediary, then we should make sure that this intermediary is there to provide some services or to limit the risks. And I would argue, as a lawyer, we should also make sure that the middleman is regulated and that the supervisory bodies, like in Germany, BaFin and Bundesbank, they pay attention to the questions of insolvency, to the questions of how the assets are protected from cyber attacks and IT security and things like this. And therefore, it is also very important that we have some regulated participants. And I would say that CeFi, so centralized finance, make sense for those who do not want to take the risk, who maybe do not even know what the risks are. This is a nice also example, what you just said, Gökhan and Henry, about the Celsius case, which we can touch on. And then to see really how this risk are reduced and what you can do. So, and the question you just asked, Henry, about the assets of the user. So let's take the example of Coinbase. So Coinbase gave an SEC report a couple of months ago, where Coinbase published towards the SEC that the assets of the users could be not protected in case Coinbase Global, so the US entity, is becoming bankrupt, so in an insolvency scenario. And then many people ask, why is it like this? Because as we thought, or as we were believing here in Germany, what Coinbase Germany said was that the assets of the users, they're segregated, they're separated from the assets of Coinbase. And therefore, there is no risk that the assets of the users are in risk of insolvency. However, this comes again to my point, the knowledge is lacking, the knowledge of the participants, of the users, because there is not just one wallet where you put the assets of the users and you hold them there, and one wallet of Coinbase where Coinbase is putting its own assets and is doing trading. In fact, there may be some more wallets, like a trading wallet, where both assets are getting mixed up, especially when you do really high frequency trading and you need liquidity, you mix up the assets. And as I understand the SEC report of Coinbase, so the information which Coinbase was giving out was in relation to that wallet which you use for trading, where the assets are getting mixed up. And the result of that publication was that in case Coinbase would become insolvent and the assets are lying in this one wallet where both assets, Coinbase assets and user assets, are mixed up, then the users would lose their assets, because this is actually something related to civil law and insolvency law. You cannot really segregate any longer the user wallet from the user assets, from the assets of Coinbase, because they're both mixed up. We have a wallet with Bitcoin, and you cannot really say any longer which Bitcoin belongs to Coinbase and which Bitcoins belong to the users. And therefore, in that case, the users would become, in such a scenario, creditors, and they would need to get in line and hope that they will get something out of the insolvency proceedings. And this is actually a big risk. And this is something which we now face, not just under US insolvency law, but also under European and German insolvency law, where we say, okay, once the assets are mixed up, then you really lose your right to your asset. And this is just for the custody and trading part. If you start to do some lending business, like with Celsius, it's even worse, because people don't really understand what lending means. They think that they would give their Bitcoin or their assets to a third party, like lending, and they would lie there, like you would go to a pawn shop and give your watch and get some money, and your watch is lying at the pawn shop. This is not true, because if you look at what Celsius was doing, they were getting the assets, and they were immediately trading that asset. So the assets were not even any longer worth Celsius. They were gone. So this is something which we also now see. If you look at the publications of the insolvency publications right now of Celsius, no one can really say, where are all the assets Celsius was collecting? Where are they now lying? Are they with Celsius? Are they somewhere else? And this is also a big issue. And this is something where I would come back to you, Gökhan. So this was what I already said. So given this, would you say that DeFi is the best solution, or is maybe CeFi better? So what is your opinion on that?
So there can so many answers to your questions, but maybe start it for the outlook for our DEX. I guess DeFi is more for people who are more familiar with the business, the transaction type, and also how all the stuff on the blockchain works. You know, you should need a specific knowledge to be sure that you're doing the right stuff. I guess, especially traders who are bloody beginners should not do businesses like, especially not lending and then try to invest. Because what are mostly doing people, as you described, that already they lend the cryptos going to invest in. And the problem is, if especially when you trade on leverage, you know, and which is highly risky if you are a rookie there. So therefore, I would say DeFi is definitely for the folks who have a better knowledge, who know exactly what they do, and belongs also a little bit to their business, you know. And CeFi is still something which is great for the average Joe, that they get used to or learn how to invest, how to do staking, make their first experience about that, be secure. I mean, even investing in cryptos, I mean, you can do it with saving plans where you invest money on a monthly basis, but learn also how to invest into cryptos is great on CeFi. And I see a risk of losing money if you do it on DeFi, if you have no clue about that. But I guess, and now here's the outlook for the future. The more it becomes the new normal and DeFi becomes, let's say, Is lending in nowadays in the normal business, or even banks try to adapt DeFi or traditional financial institutions? Because frankly speaking, even the traditional financial institutions have to change their business model. I mean, we see the merge of many institutions out there. Banks go bankrupt or banks getting bought by other banks. I mean, I currently have that on the ground with my own clients. You know, they merge together, one after the other. And that is also something which shows that something has to change even in traditional financial market. It means even there has to be new asset classes. They have to be new ways of lending, borrowing, and also sending money. And I guess that is currently where we are on the cliff of that something has to change or people will fall off the cliff. And I mean by that institutions will fall off the cliff and will be not profitable again, because currently there is a huge competition on the market. I mean, we see it in the retail space, how much competition there is. And now it starts to, that kind of race starts also in the corporate world, because corporates also understood the benefit of DeFi and even CeFi. I mean, corporate lending is now also a thing. I mean, it's still risky for some institutions, but I mean, just look at that, that BlackRock is going to do much more with Bitcoins and cryptos at all. And those guys are the leading guys in the financial market. I mean, they own nearly everything they have, you know, there's nothing those guys never touched, you know? So therefore that shows you also the direction and the route the market will go down pretty soon.
Yep. Now, what I see happening is that, let's say the CeFi and DeFi markets somewhere will meet. Yeah. So we see, for example, you just said the costs of sending money abroad. Yeah. They are not as high as 3 or 5 years ago. Why? Because there are alternatives through blockchain services. Yeah. 2 or 3 years ago, if you had cryptos and you would like to give them hand over to a custodian service, you had to pay for it every quarter, yeah, 25 basis points. So 1% of your cryptos were deflated because of costs. And nowadays, instead of paying for a custodian service, you get a fee. Yeah, you get the staking or yielding fee. Yeah, so like we had an interest paid for our savings on our traditional bank accounts until the negative interest appeared. So the two worlds meet.
Yeah, exactly. So I would also say it like this. I think you both put it in a nice way. I don't see it as black or white. I don't see it as DeFi or CeFi. I actually believe we are in a point at a phase where we can try to combine both. So we can try to get the benefit of both sides. I think the benefit of DeFi you described quite nicely, Henry, is that you can interact limitless with lower costs and directly, and the risks are that if something goes wrong, there's no one who you can get hold liable for. Plus, some really need the additional service. For example, it is difficult to set up their own wallet, their own MetaMask connected to the DeFi, buy Ether before, and then swap it to some stable coin, and then to be able to do some trading, and they maybe don't even know with whom they should do the trading and stuff like that. So some really need that service. I think even myself, I started quite early, but the reason why I didn't buy Bitcoin in the old days is because I wanted to have this intermediary who gives me like real transparency. Where's the wallet? Where's the private key? Where are my assets lying? And this is something I think the majority of the people nowadays, they need it. I think there are some really truly experts who don't need it, and those who we should not really push to use a CeFi service. But I think the majority needs a CeFi service. And it would be amazing if you find a CeFi service, let's say an exchange or traditional European bank, which allows you to do trading also in DeFi. And what I understand from my experience in the market, there, besides the regulatory stuff, which is complex, the technical stuff is also very interesting. I give you just an example. So a traditional German bank or European bank, which is having its own core banking system, for this, it is very difficult to start a new crypto trading service or crypto custody service. And also some say that KYC is a major issue. So Gürkan, I think you have experience with that. What would you say if I would tell you it is impossible for a traditional bank or for a SEC to get involved in DeFi, or for a traditional bank to get involved in crypto because a lack of core banking system or KYC?
So let me explain you first what the current circumstances in Germany are, and then go to the question regarding the core system and the outlook, and give you also some examples which are already live. The thing, banks have understood the relevance of the crypto assets, and that's why some first institutions are offering CFD investments, which doesn't mean that you own the crypto, but at least you can participate in the value change there. That is a great thing. I guess that's also the first way how they can try if there is the right level of appetite in the market. Exactly with those clients who are also in this case, our clients who use our investment and wealth management platform, but also our core banking systems, we have discussions about what could be the next steps. And frankly speaking, we also are in negotiations with huge crypto exchanges. I don't like to give the names right now as it is not totally done and dusted. How we could interact together means we're connecting them through our core system with the bank, that a client who wants to invest in cryptos can do that over his account, doesn't need to open another account at the crypto exchange because the KYC is already done by the bank. You know, you already have a trusted partner who did all the regulatory stuff there and is fully compliant with that. So that makes also the life easier for a crypto exchange because they don't have to do the KYC and all the stuff again. Because the problem is also, and I mean, that is a huge factor. And nowadays, I guess we all agree that there's still a war of talent. People don't have sufficient resources to do the business. I mean, just remember back in the days when we had the first or second lockdown, how many people tried to start an account on the crypto exchanges or at Trade Republic. Some of them had to wait for weeks until their account get opened. And with that kind of partnership and connection to a core banking system, you have immediately an account. You know, it's just another option in your online banking, and which you can use that and can do the transaction through your online banking, but you're investing in this case, maybe Coinbase, Kraken, or whoever it is, the other partner of your financial institution. That is currently in discussion also for Europe with European banks, also in Germany. What we as FIS already do is we did that already in the US 1.5 years ago with NYDIG. That means many banks or many clients of banks can already buy Bitcoin through their online banking, through their account with a partner, which we have in this case, NYDIG. So it is already live and it's proven that it works. And there is a huge appetite. I think we just need the first movers in Europe because when I spoke to the board of many big groups here in Europe, some of them are very brave, and I can give the name of them, like BBVA, for instance, but there are some others who say, nah, let's see who's the first mover, let's see how it goes with those guys, and then we can be maybe the next mover or maybe one of the last movers, mm-hmm. you know? And I think as soon as the bigger groups will join the party of offering something like Bitcoin investments or even NFT. I mean, NFT is also something which could be discussed maybe, and some other smart contracts. As soon as this is more offered on from the financial institutions, then exactly the merge which you mentioned, that traditional finance, CeFi, DeFi will merge more together, come closer together, will start and happen right then, you know?
Yeah, so I think if we say that access to DeFi will be enabled through CeFi, yeah. So we have the travel rules coming up. It's going to become harder to get access to cryptocurrencies because it's all regulated. The brokerage services, you have to whitelist the addresses where you're going to send your cryptos to. So if the DeFi's cannot be regulated, the access to the DeFi's will be regulated through the CeFi's. Is that something we can conclude, Ali?
Yes, nicely said. I think these are also nicely concluding marks of yours because we reached the end of our podcast. So I think this is absolutely right. I think with like tech providers and with providers like this, we can bring both worlds together. We can bring the CeFi or the traditional banking world to the crypto world, first of all. This is still CeFi, but then also connect them to the DeFi world. And this is, I think, going to happen in the next months. I actually believe this is going to happen very soon. And what you also said, Gürkan, about the NFTs, I mean, this is something we did not touch at all so far. I think we should do that. We should do that on our next episode. So our next episode will follow soon. And we had now a longer break because of the summer break. But I think we can do the next our next session on NFTs rather shortly. But given that said this, I would like to thank you both for today. And I'm looking forward to have our next session with you. And then we're going to talk about the NFTs and how NFTs are going maybe to change the capital market.
Okay.
Thank you, Ali. Have a good one.
Yeah. Thanks for hosting. Bye-bye.